We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Tommy is in studio with me today because he's heading to spring training tomorrow and he needed to pick up some cash on the way out, some petty cash.
Yes, because
for
my
trip.
My plan is on Sunday, the Nats go up to Fort Myers or something for some one of their exhibition games, and I'm not making a trip to Fort Myers from West Palm Beach.
Right.
So I'm planning on going to Gulfstream Park on Sunday.
Why wouldn't you?
You know, and play some horses. So yeah, I needed some extra money to pick up for that.
We take care of our employees here. Speaking of employees, did you see that Dartmouth basketball? They're unionizing at Dartmouth.
Of all schools.
They don't have scholarships.
But the thing is, they are generally they're a conservative school. Not just an Ivy League school, but Dartmouth is considered conservative.
No.
A lot of conservatives have come from Dartmouth.
I don't think Hanover, New Hampshire is very conservative. Really?
Yes.
I don't think any of the Ivy League schools are conservative.
Dartmouth is considered
conservative.
These are
bastions of progressive thinking.
Dartmouth is not that. Look it up.
Well, one of my best friends in high school went to Dartmouth, played football at Dartmouth. The whole family were Dartmouth people. And I will ask him. You're just saying it's more conservative compared to the other Ivy League schools?
Compared to schools, period. Colleges. There's not many conservative colleges out there.
I would say Liberty University might be conservative.
Yeah. Did you see they just got hit with a big fine for lying about crime on campus?
I didn't.
After touting about how safe they were?
I did not.
Yeah, $14 million fine.
So they actually do have a crime problem.
Yes.
So they were lying about having a crime problem when crime is a big cause for the conservatives in this upcoming election, the crime in our major cities. We have so much to talk about today, but I don't know how much of it will be about what people want to hear about. We will not go down the path of discussing the contingency plans in the event of disasters in pro sports leagues. We had yesterday, Tommy, and I read it yesterday. Let me see if I can find it. It was Steven who wrote something like, oh, Jesus, where is it? He basically wrote something like, whatever you guys did in those last 15 minutes of the show, don't do again. But I had a lot of tweets and emails from people who were fascinated with the conversation like I was. You know, be curious, not judgmental. See, that's your problem. Be curious, not judgmental. That's
you know what's right?
That's a Ted Lasso
right before curious in the alphabet? Clueless.
I think that is a Ted Lasso from a Walt Whitman poem. That's his line. Speaking of Walt Whitman, do you like the way I'm rolling here? Walt Whitman, my alma mater, the high school in Montgomery County, they beat BCC, our longtime arch rivals, Churchill was a big rival as well, last night to advance to the state quarterfinals. They play Laurel at Whitman Friday night, 7 o'clock. It was a sold-out crowd. I could not go last night. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go on Friday night. I hope I will. But Chris Lunn has been the coach there for coming up, Coach Chris Lunn, on 20 years. I think it's 20 years. He has always been one of the best high school basketball coaches in the area, certainly one of the best in public schools. And he's led Whitman to the, you know, to Xfinity Center three different times, I believe. And they're really good again this year. So good win for Whitman last night, 59-54 over BCC. And they get Laurel in the state quarters on Friday night at Whitman. Looking forward to that.
Can I mention something?
Go Vikes. Yes.
Can I mention something? Just a little bit of research on the go here.
Yeah.
From 1920 to 1960, Dartmouth students unilaterally supported the Republican candidate in each presidential election.
Okay, what about since 1960?
Okay, from the, during the 60s, during the Vietnam War, things started to change a little bit.
Yeah, as it did everywhere in the
country. But back in the 1980s, it went back to being a conservative bastion again.
Really?
Yes.
So they were Reagan backers, and Reagan turned them around in the 80s?
Yep, it looks that way.
Hmm. Okay.
The 1980s was a period of increased conservatism across the United States, and seemingly at Harvard as well.
Harvard or Dartmouth?
Dartmouth, I mean.
Okay.
It was the creation of the conservative publication, the Dartmouth Review, that started in the 80s.
Okay. Well, I mean, we saw an increase in conservatism across this country everywhere.
I know that, but for most of its existence, it was a conservative school.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
How about that? That is a fun fact to know and tell.
I know this is hard to believe.
Well, I actually, my very good friend from Whitman, all right, my good friend Doug Kerr, who is one of my best friends growing up from first grade on, went to Dartmouth. A very good friend of mine from high school and grade school, Lisa Valdez, is a professor at Dartmouth right now. Walt Whitman as well.
Okay.
She went to Princeton. Doug went to Dartmouth. I went to Maryland. But they were very good friends of mine.
Well, the whole point was...
I know what the point was.
The point
was conservative.
That it was
unionizing
conservative.
In a conservative environment.
Of all schools, it's kind of unique that it's happening there.
Yeah. I will be interested to see... This was actually a significant story. I have not delved into the details of how this whole thing will play out. I'm sure there's some really good business reporters. Maybe John Orand would have a good take on this, or some of the other guys we've had on from Sportico and other places. But when you unionize as a student, you become an employee. First of all, I'm winging it here. I don't know if I'm way off here. There are students on college campuses that are part of unions because they're working on college campuses, right? Like there would be, if you work at a college campus as a custodial person or as a dining hall, you know, server. A lot of those places are unionized, aren't they?
I don't know. I don't really know. Now you're driving down a road I can't help you with.
But why wouldn't you as a school, rather than pay these union employees and get into a negotiation with a union, why wouldn't you just say, to hell with the basketball program?
I agree. I think more schools are going to start saying that as we see things sort of fall apart within the scholastic athletic system of this country. I think you'll see more schools do that. The big schools, no.
Now, Ivy League's a bad example, right? Because it's non-scholarship.
Right.
But if you take that to a scholarship Division I Power 5 program, if they unionize and they negotiate, you know, a wage scale for their services and other things like vacation time and hours and the whole thing, do they cease to be eligible for room, board, and tuition? Because I would say,
that would have to be part of the negotiation.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, maybe it's a way to control the NILs through union negotiations.
Oh, well, the schools won't like that. Well, because there'll be recruiting disadvantages. If you end up with unions controlling the NIL, which is what you're describing.
Yes.
There will be some unions that are going to be good at it and others that won't. And the school's programs are going to say, wait a minute.
I want to see the whole thing collapse. The whole kit and caboodle just collapse.
The show, as always, is presented by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a free in-home estimate. You know, I had Jerry Palm on the radio show today. You know, he's the longtime CBS Sports bracketologist, college basketball writer. And Denton, my producer, booked him because Denton's really into college basketball, and he knows that I've always been into college basketball.
Right.
But, man, I have never been less into college basketball than I am right now. And I have this sense, part of it is being influenced by Maryland not being very good.
It was a rough year.
I understand that. But part of it, too, is Caitlin Clark has taken college basketball by storm. She's the biggest story in college basketball.
Yes.
And has been.
Yes.
It's very possible that some of the women's tournament games with Iowa are going to be higher rated than the NCAA men's tournament games. I would guess, because I've seen some of the numbers just in general during the regular season, they have outrated other games that were men's games. And then, you know, clearly this has been building, but my God, this particular NFL offseason, you'd think that the draft was tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, on Friday.
I mean, we're talking, what, 8 weeks away?
50 days.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah.
It's incredible. And now with free agency starting next week, you know, and by the way, all, you know, the names that are out there for trades, the quarterback thing, especially this year, is so intense.
But you part of it, what's playing into it, is you have three highly rated quarterbacks, and the perception is three teams that want quarterbacks at first, second,
no
third.
Doubt, no doubt.
You know, so I mean, it really accentuates the interest, and quarterback is the most dramatic, colorful, most important position on the field, so it's going to generate the most interest.
But back to what started this conversation, college basketball, I do think that NIL and the transfer portal have completely diminished interest in college sports.
I think
now,
it has
I think
well.
College football is a different animal altogether. It's just such a way of life. It's so much part of the bloodstream in the South, Midwest. I don't know that the transfer portal and NIL are going to ruin college football, although, you know, the conference reshuffling certainly makes it difficult to follow and hard for people to really stomach, you know, longtime fans. But, man, college basketball, the roster turnover is so significant year in and year out. You get attached for one season to a player, and then he's, you know, an unrestricted free agent and leaves you after you paid him $1 million the
well,
year
look
before.
We're already talking about Cooper Flagg.
I know.
As being an NBA player, and he hasn't even entered college yet.
Yeah. Not to mention the so I do think that college hoops is really diminishing in importance. It'll be interesting to see how the tournament does this particular March, because there aren't major stars in the sport. There isn't somebody that you point to like Zion Williamson, you know, a few years ago.
I guess the only one really would be Zach?
Zach Edey.
Yeah,
at Purdue.
From Purdue. I think that's the most recognizable.
And actually the Purdue team, because they have similar players, right, and the fact that they lost to a 16 seed last year, similar to what Virginia did, and they came back and won the title, is an interesting story. But I think the other part of this too is, you know, Caleb Williams is going to be drafted number one overall. He's going to get this, you know, salary wage scale contract, and it's going to not look that much different than what he's earned in the last couple of years at Southern Cal.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have these players that are going to be much more savvy when it comes to finance coming into the league.
Absolutely.
And I think some of the pushback on the combine, Mike Jones was on with me. I think it was Mike Jones earlier in the week that said this to me. I said, so what's your big takeaway from the combine? And he said, my big takeaway from the combine is that I don't know how much longer it's going to be around, because players, you know, and I added that these players now have more ability to say no to things because they've already earned several millions of dollars. And so not working out, not measuring, not throwing, not showing up. Marvin Harrison Jr. didn't even show up.
Yeah.
And now it's not going away because it's such a massive television show now for the NFL Network.
I know.
And for ESPN, but it's changing. But anyway, yeah, college sports is different, and I know you hate this, but man, like last night, you know, I was flipping back and forth. I did watch Purdue, Illinois, which was a very, very good college basketball game. But I was also drawn to this incredible Cleveland comeback against Boston. You know, the win probability for the Celtics up 22 in the fourth quarter was 99.9%. The Cavs actually sat starters, including Donovan Mitchell. And this kid, Dean Wade, who played at K-State, I didn't even know he was in the league, to be honest with you. He's been a nothing player for Cleveland, had 5 threes in the fourth quarter and led him from 22 down to a 105-104 win.
You know, you know who was in the crowd for that game?
I do.
The Kelsey brothers.
The Kelsey brothers were there in Cleveland.
They're Ohio.
Yeah, they're Ohio kids.
Yeah.
And they were going nuts.
Yeah.
You wanted to talk about Jason's retirement, but we never got to it. Yeah. But I was going to mention real quickly, Jason Tatum got fouled on a game, what was a game-winning attempt with like 0.4 or 0.6 seconds left, and replay overturned it. And it was, I did not like the call at all. I thought the call had to stand. There was contact with his chest from the defender, but man, they've been overturning a lot of calls. I know you watch a lot of NBA too. They've been overturning a lot of calls. I did tell you the other day, right, that LeBron's playing at a level that's outrageous.
Well, it's easier than ever for 39-year-old men to play basketball in the NBA.
Yeah. And you know who came up big last night as I move around here a lot?
Who?
Bradley Beal was huge in overtime for Phoenix and Denver. He had his
moments here in Washington.
He did. He's
a very good player.
He's a very good player, but he's exactly where he needs to be.
Yes, he is.
He's the third best offensive player on that team when they have everything.
You know what? Phoenix better do something because Kevin Durant has all but disappeared from the conversation, period.
I don't think so.
Oh, I think he has. Maybe among the little circle of people that you've managed to find who actually watch the NBA still.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we talk about LeBron. We talk about Curry. We talk
Jokic.
About the kid from Indiana. What's his name?
Jokic,
kid from Indiana.
Halliburton.
Yeah. I mean.
No, Kevin Durant's still considered one of the absolute best.
Yeah, but you have to stop and say, oh, okay, Kevin Durant. It doesn't roll off your tongue anymore.
He's going to go down as a top 15
of
ranked of all time.
Of course he is, yes.
Okay, just making sure that you weren't about to say that
Willis Reed's going to be ranked ahead of him. I'm not saying where he belongs status-wise. Okay. I'm saying his profile has shrunk.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's so interesting about his career is, you know, he couldn't beat Golden State, so he joined him.
Right.
Won a couple of titles there with Curry and with Draymond and with Thompson, with Clay. And the narrative about him is he had something to prove when he left there, you know, and went to Brooklyn because he just jumped on an already existing championship team. But the truth is, he was probably the best player on that team during those championship seasons. But still, he went to Brooklyn and was a toenail away from being in the NBA Finals and potentially winning the whole thing.
Yeah.
But that, you know, was not a three-pointer at the end in Game 7. They ended up losing that game in overtime. And then the whole, it was the debacle of Kyrie and him and Harden and everything else. And now he's in Phoenix. It should be a good situation, but God, the West is so
loaded. The West is so stacked.
So, see? You want to keep talking NBA
here? No, I don't. You know what? Wait, you know what Phoenix doesn't have?
What?
The slow, fat, white guy.
Alvin Adams.
They don't have the slow, fat, white guy.
Like Jokic?
Yeah. That's what you need today because players have evolved so much. Their bodies, they're so strong. They're so quick. You know, the athletes are so great physically. You need that slow, fat, white guy to slow them down.
Who? Paul Westphal played for the Suns.
Yes, he did. He played, started with the Celtics.
I know.
Then he went to the Suns and really was great there. And that 76
final against the
finals
Celtics.
Against the Celtics was phenomenal.
Yeah. Was it the Van Arsdale twins or brothers that were in the backcourt with Westphal, one of them?
No, I don't think so. I think they were out of the league by then.
Were they?
I mean, they were traded. They started playing in the 60s. Maybe they were still around then. They used to play for the Knicks. at one point.
I thought that they, I thought they were with the Suns, because that's the year after, Tommy, the Bullets lost the first championship series that I really remember. They got swept
Golden
by Golden State.
Yeah, and Rick Barry.
Yeah, and
but that Phoenix team with Gar Hurd.
Gar Hurd had the shot.
The shot.
Triple overtime. It's one of the great Brent Musburger calls of all time. It's one of the greatest finals games of all time.
Yes, it was tremendous.
It was tremendous.
But and Alvin Adams. But I, you know, one time I'm at a Wizards game. This is in '96 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and Dick Van Arsdale was on that team.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Okay. The other guy, the other brother was Tom.
Yeah,
just like the Smothers Brothers.
Alvin Adams. So Ricky Sobers, who, by the way, ended up playing with the Bullets at one point. Paul Westfall, Gar Hurd, Curtis Perry, Alvin Adams, the center. They were the starters. Van Arsdale played 35 minutes.
Okay.
And by the way, Tommy, in Basketball Reference, they refer to Game 5 of that series as the greatest game ever played.
It sure felt like it when we were watching it. And I saw a lot of great Knicks games over the years, but that was just unbelievable. And so to continue, I'm at a Wizards game in 96. I think they were the Bullets still then.
They would have been.
Okay.
Yeah.
At the Cap Center. And I'm at the press table, and there's a big guy sitting next to me. And I didn't know who he was. But we got talking, and it turns out he's Gar Hurd.
Yeah.
You know, he was scouting for somebody.
Nope.
And I grabbed his arm. I said, "You made the shot."
You did.
That's the all-time shot.
It was. It was. For people that don't remember this game, just summarizing it real quickly, a triple overtime game five of the NBA Finals with the series deadlocked at two games apiece in the Boston Garden, where just it seemed like all hell broke loose multiple times during the end of
regulation.
Yeah, and
remember, the Boston
first
Garden
overtime,
back then
was
100 degrees.
100 degrees. And by the way, it's court storming conversations. The Boston Garden floor got stormed all the time in the postseason. Yeah. Was that the game, though, that one of the referees got smacked in the head, got punched in the face? Like Mendy Rudolph, is that the name?
I don't recall that. I know Mendy Rudolph,
yeah.
But I don't recall if that happened in the game.
But anyway, at the end of the second overtime, there was a situation. I may get this wrong, but back then, if you called a timeout that you didn't have, it was a technical foul on you. The other team got one free throw, but you kept the ball and you could advance it. They didn't advance it to three quarters of the court. They advanced it to half court back then in the NBA. So down one with the ball, but needing to go the length of the court. Whoever the coach was, who was the coach for Phoenix?
Scotty.
I'll look this
what's
up.
What's his name?
Hold on, I just had it up.
Scotty something. I'm forgetting his name.
I'll find it in a moment.
Okay.
The coach called a timeout to take the technical foul. And the reason he did it was because one free throw was all they shot, so that worst case they'd be down by two, Tommy, but they would get to advance the ball to half court. They'd get the benefit.
Yes.
Like you think about some of these rules that they eventually figured out there were loopholes, which in essence, breaking the rule benefited your team. So they took the timeout. Boston made the free throw to go up by two, but Phoenix advanced the ball to half court, and they threw it into Gar Hurd because there's 1 second to go.
Right.
There were no tenths of seconds on the clock back then.
No.
And he turned and he fired about a 30-footer.
Arc. Big arc.
Big arc. And it went in, and Musburger, I'll play the call. I'll find it and play the call at the end of this show so you guys can listen to the Musburger call. He's going nuts, and it goes to a third overtime. But the
Celtics won the game.
That was
a Havlicek championship, I might point out.
Cowens,
Havlicek,
JoJo White.
That was I think they won in 74 too, didn't they?
Would 74 be the year that they beat Jabbar?
Yeah.
Beat Alcindor?
Yeah.
With Milwaukee.
But that's 76. McLeod was the coach.
John McLeod.
Yeah.
He was a longtime coach.
Yes, he was.
In the NBA. That is a game. You know, I was mentioning in the conversation about court storming, because I don't think we talked about this together. I'm over it. Like, just stop it. It's unsafe. I don't care that students go to games so that they can storm the court. Go to the games and be loud and impact the games that way. I'm over it. But, man, the field stormings and the court stormings in the 70s were a regular occurrence, and the goalposts would get torn down and baskets would get torn down. It was much less safe back then, it happened at the professional level all the time.
I'm going to tell you what changed it. It was the 1980 World Series, the Phillies and the Royals. The Phillies were about to clinch the World Series in Philadelphia, and in the seventh or eighth inning, they brought out police on horseback.
I kind of remember that.
And lined the field. And in between the horses and the policemen were policemen with dogs. And they lined the field as well. And that was in response to keeping the Philly fans, who obviously are nuts, in the stands. And it worked. And there were some, I remember Dick Young, who was a sports writer in New York, and grew conservative over the years. He was more happy with the fact that with the law and order display than he was with the World Series. But that changed things. That changed the whole. Other teams started to put police on the field before the game ended, or I don't know how they did it in arenas, but I know that's a watershed moment in changing the idea of rushing the field like people used to.
Yeah, because it happened all the time. Now, one of the examples I brought up was the 84 NBA Finals, Lakers against, it was the Magic Bird first matchup in the finals. You go watch Game 7 at the end of that thing, and Bird's like, you know, elbowing and almost punching people to get off the floor. It happened all the time in courts. In arenas, but professionally, it really got dialed back, and it's become much more in this century anyway, a college thing,
yes,
not a pro thing.
Did you hear what Jay Billis wants to do?
No.
He wants to, once you get all the kids on the court, then you line the court with the police, don't let any kids leave, and then arrest them all.
That's not a Billis-like take, actually.
No, it's not.
I mean, that sounds more of a Dartmouth kind of a
yes,
take.
Yes, it is. That's a Dick Young take right there.
Yeah. All right, so with Tommy in studio, we were just reading a bunch of emails, and usually I do that right before the show, and we pick a few out to read, but there's some good ones here today. So I'm going to read this one from Riyadh. That's the name of the person. It's not from Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
Dear Kevin, I've been a devoted listener, and I discovered you and Tom on 980 years ago. Being a diehard Skins fan from Florida, you've made following my favorite team easy. I also now know way more about the Caps, Wizards, and Terps basketball than anybody needs. Really? The Caps? I listen to your show every night before bed, and now I'm trying ASMR on the weekends. Anyway, no days off. Can we do 7 days? The people need you. No. Tommy would unionize if I started to talk about seven games. So we can't do that. This from BP Heavenbound. I've rated and reviewed 5 stars, always. Tuesdays and Thursdays are can't miss with Tommy. On a recent Florida trip with my wife to our favorite karaoke bar, I got to see Tommy purify. When I asked my wife if she knew who that was performing, her guess was Ernest Hemingway? I've got to weigh in on Florida's karaoke gate. Kev, you're right. This is a moral victory for Tom, but we need to connect the dots regarding Sammy Panama and Watusi Records. I think he's saying it's a moral victory because you didn't get suckered into paying the $1,000. Old Sammy probably is in the witness protection program. And when he found out that Tommy Purify was really Lavero, the reporter who steals seating charts from secret mob meetings, Sammy Panama went running, as he probably should have. Lavero is feared and loved. Great show. And then he says, too much Terps basketball. And at the same time, not enough Terps basketball. Talk to your people and make sure the Commanders take Jaden Daniels at number 2, writes BP Heavenbound. Yeah, Tommy, it was, I remember the crime family name, the Buffalinos.
Buffalinos.
Russell Buffalino, am I right?
Yeah, it was a testimonial dinner to him. in Wilkes-Barre.
And you went in
filled
and
with mobsters,
the seating chart.
Judge politicians. And as soon as they went in the room, I pulled the seating charts off the tables and ran out the door and never looked back.
No. And and you reported on the big testimonial dinner.
Yeah.
Do you think they were upset that you had so much information about who was there?
I think maybe they got word, you know, because I told you a year later, there was a thing called the Pennsylvania Crime Commission. It was like the state investigatory commission into organized crime. And they had hearings a year later about crime in the state. And I was covering the hearings. And one of the agents walked up to me and he said, "You're the guy who went running out of that hotel room with the charts under your arm, aren't you?"
Really?
I said, "How do you know?" He said, "We were in a van across the street taking pictures of people going in."
Oh, wow. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
You must have been nervous.
Oh, well, again, it was once I did it in almost all one move. I went down the tables, ripped the shorts off, stuck them on my arm, went out the door, and I guess I still had a little bit of speed left at that point. I didn't even look to see if anyone was chasing me. I had to run a block to my car. I just ran as fast as I could, and I got away with it.
It'd be funny if, like, you know, the guy that handles Sammy Panama's part of the witness protection program said, "You know, the guy that you want to sign, that you want to dupe, is Levero." I mean, he brought down the Buffalino group. Anyway, rate us and review us if you get a chance. 5 stars if you see fit on Apple, and a quick 1 to 2 sentence review. It's always a big help for us. Subscribe to the podcast and follow us on Spotify and Apple. It's really easy to do on Apple on your iPhone. It's a plus sign in the upper right-hand corner, and then on Spotify, it's down the left-hand side of the screen.
By the way, if you want to find out more about the Buffalino family, watch The Irishman.
Long movie, but very good.
Yeah. You can find out more. And there's several books about them, including one called The Quiet Don, written by a friend of mine.
You know what was on last night in between after the basketball ended up, the Purdue-Illinois game? I love this movie. And every time it's on, I get sucked into it. The Town. It's a really good movie.
Jeremy Renner is unbelievable.
Playing Coughlin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben Affleck's great
in that movie. Yes,
he is. And John Hamm is excellent in that movie.
Yeah.
But that movie's so good.
And it's based on a true story.
About that Charlestown crew. It is based on something
based on a true story.
There's creative liberties always.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ben Affleck directed that movie, too. I think it was one of the first. I think he directed that movie, and then he directed Argo. Didn't he direct Argo also?
I don't know if he did.
Because Affleck now is a really accomplished director.
Well, they directed. I think he did. He direct the Michael Jordan movie, Air?
Mm.
He was in it. Him and Matt. He was the producer because it was him and Matt Damon, their production company,
right,
that did it. I don't know if he directed it or not.
I want to see if there's a list of the movies. There's got to be a list of movies he's directed.
Yeah.
I'm not finding it very easily. Is he married to J-Lo?
I think so.
Why am I blanking? Or is it Jennifer Garner?
No, J-Lo. It's J-Lo.
It's J-Lo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I ended up falling. I didn't fall asleep to it.
No,
he
directed Air.
He directed Air.
Yes.
So what are the movies? Am I right that he directed Argo?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He directed Argo. So,
what other movies? Because he really has become now a very accomplished.
Gone, Baby, Gone.
Oh, yeah.
Very good movie.
Yeah.
Gone, Baby, Gone. He directed. He was in a movie that may have been the worst movie I've ever seen.
What?
It was William Dafoe was in it. It was kind of like a spy thriller, and I can't find the name of it. I don't know if he directed. If he directed it, it does not. It basically wipes out all the good movies he directed. It's that bad.
Really?
I think it got a 6% on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever to measure. I'll try to find the name of it at some point.
He's currently married to Jennifer Lopez.
Yes.
He was married to Jennifer Garner for 14 years. and they had a child together. There you go.
Couple of kids from Boston.
Couple of kids from Boston.
Him and Matt Damon.
Good Will Hunting.
Yes.
Right? Elliot Smith, the soundtrack for that movie. Incredible.
Yes.
All right, what else?
What else?
We got a lot coming up. We'll get to it right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This segment of the show brought to you by Window Nation. March is a critical time to check your home's windows. If yours are cracked, leaking, won't open, or stay open, now is the time to call Window Nation. Buy two, get two free with no money down, no interest, and zero payments for 24 months. Window Nation's professional installation teams have over 10 years of experience. And if your windows are 10 years of age or older, you need new windows. You're losing money on your heating bills, your air conditioning bills, and Window Nation can save you up to 30% on your annual energy costs. Their installation teams have tons of experience. They can install your new windows in one day or less, and the windows come with a lifetime warranty. I've been endorsing Window Nation for now coming up on 15 years, and I've got complete trust in them. It just doesn't seem that long. They've got the experience. They've got the credibility. They're trusted by over 200,000 homeowners, including me. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a free estimate. And you can do with that whatever you choose. Buy two, get two free with no limit, with no money down, no interest, and no payments for two full years. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. So you wanted to talk about, I don't know, does this have to do with the search committee?
The process.
The process?
The process of picking personnel for this football team.
Okay, go ahead. Shoot. Okay. I'm all ears.
And let's limit it to the quarterback discussion.
Okay.
Okay, we have discussed different avenues that they could take for quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could sign one of the free agents, like try to sign for Kirk Cousins, or another free agent. They could draft a quarterback, hang on to the second pick in the draft, or they could trade back, you know, and maybe pick a quarterback later in the draft and sign a lesser free agent that would be, you know, like a Jacoby Brissett or somebody like that.
Right.
But let me ask you this, and we've talked about this many times before this team was ever owned by Josh Harris and company. Who should make that decision?
Well, I think Adam Peters has the final say on the decision.
This is what I'm getting at.
Okay.
You can have all the consensus building, all the inclusion, you know, all the voices you want. But you can't have a decision that is against what the general manager wants. Am I right?
No.
You can?
No. Why wouldn't you be able to have a differing opinion from the general manager?
You can have a different opinion, but the decision cannot be different than what the general manager wants. The general manager...
Well, there can only be one decision, ultimately.
Yes.
What are you saying? You're saying that if Martin Mayhew... or Lance Newmark.
I'm saying if the owner, after listening to all the voices.
Oh, the owner.
After listening to the various consultants and everybody else,
okay,
they
stop
have.
Stop with the consultants. The consultants involved. Are out of the picture now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So Bob Myers is no longer involved?
Well, Bob Myers was involved in some of those interviews, like Josh Harris was, right, as an observer,
right,
and perhaps so as an advisor. Maybe he's still involved.
I guess
I wouldn't mind if Bob Myers were still involved.
But you don't want Bob Myers picking the quarterback.
No, and he's not going to.
Okay. Well, but what I'm saying is you can include all the voices you want, but if Adam Peters says, I want this guy, that's the guy they have to pick.
Right.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. You're on the record like that.
Yes.
That's all I wanted to make clear. I just wanted to get that on the record.
Why?
Because it seems like there's a situation with a lot of voices that they could get garbled, you know? They could get mixed up. People may not hear the general manager in training, you know, in the corner of the room, you know?
Wait a minute. Is Adam here? We're about to go to the window with our pick.
So I just wanted to make it clear that, and I'm all for everybody having a voice, listening to all different opinions and stuff, but ultimately, the opinion that matters the most.
What are you getting at?
General manager.
You're getting at, I don't know why you want me on the record for this. It doesn't mean that I can't, down the road, if it's reported that Josh Harris came in like Snyder did and hijacked the pick, be upset about it.
I'm not talking about hijacking the pick.
Yeah.
I'm saying maybe there was a consensus, a group of people like that include Cliff Kingsbury, let's say,
yeah,
that decided that there was more momentum for this one other candidate than the one that the general manager wants.
Right.
I'm saying that doesn't matter.
Well,
the general manager's guy has to be the guy.
Yes, I think it is.
Okay.
In this organization right now, I think it's been made very clear, by the way, by Dan Quinn recently.
Okay.
Who said the final say is Adam Peters on the roster.
Okay.
Coaching the team and the decisions with respect to coaching the team is my decision.
Yes.
That's the way it should work.
That's the way it should work.
I mean, it doesn't always work that way, and it can be successful in different ways, but that's the way it's going to work here for now. You want, in San Francisco when they traded up for Trey Lance, I would bet you that was, I don't know what the structure is. John Lynch is a general manager, but he really relies on his talent evaluators, and Kyle Shanahan's a big part of at least the quarterback conversation. But I would bet you that organization was all over the place with opinions on Trey Lance.
Well, I would think so, but I think it's pretty clear in that decision. In that organization, Kyle Shanahan has the final decision.
Certainly on quarterback.
Yeah, I would think that basically John Lynch is still literally a general manager in training.
Right. But what are you getting at? You want to continue to criticize this many cooks in the kitchen situation.
Okay. In other words, my point always was it really didn't matter who else had an opinion.
Right.
The only opinion that mattered
was Dan's.
Was for the coach, to hire the coach, to me, should have been a general manager's,
right,
Adam Peters. That should have been if Adam Peters' decision.
Right.
We have no indication that it wasn't.
Right.
At this point. I'm just saying that's the process can work with all kinds of voices. One voice matters the most.
The process. Is this a column coming up?
No. I'm writing baseball for the next week. I'm going to spring training, buddy.
But you really have had this thing, you know, you've had this thing where you've just been, and I know what it is with you because I have gotten to know you pretty well over the years. It's this anti-rich guy thing,
no,
basically.
That's not it.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That's not it.
It's very much a... These people have a lot of money, but they're just they want to appear so smart with the process and with the search committee.
You don't need a lot of money to try to want to look smart.
I don't have, I mean, I'm in benefit of the doubt Kev mode.
I know.
But I don't have much of an issue about the way anything's going down.
Right. I know.
What's interesting, though, you may have said this to me the other day, and it may not have been on the air. You know, this is the first time in the first off season all of these people are working with one another. Did you say this
yes,
to me?
Yes, I did. I said,
yeah.
I said, you know, they haven't been working together that long.
Right. So yes. So there will be a process
yes.
of figuring out, you know, what does Adam Peters really want when he says, I want tape on these different things, or I want an evaluation this way. You know, you have a bunch of people that are going to be working together here for the first time together. Now, Mayhew and Adam Peters work together. Newmark and Mayhew work together. I'm talking about the general managers,
right.
You know, the talent evaluation wing of the building. But it's a new thing. They're coming together for the first time. Adam Peters is a first-time general manager, as you just described, a GM in training. And it just happens to come at a time in which the team has the most salary cap space that they've ever had, the most in the league. They've got more draft picks in the first three rounds than they've ever had. And they have the number two overall pick and a quarterback top heavy draft, at least perception-wise, and a need for a quarterback. This is why I read that email from somebody a couple of weeks ago who said, really, this is going to be an immediate ability to evaluate the evaluators, because there are big decisions
yes.
right off the bat. It started with the head coach, because it's very possible that Adam Peters could have been the hire of Josh Harris, but that Ron Rivera had just finished year two and had 3 years left on his deal, and they were bringing Ron Rivera back. You know, it could have been.
Yeah.
But everything timed up. It all synced up. The end of Rivera, the natural end. He didn't get his fifth year,
right.
but an opportunity where you could get out. By the way, real quickly, on the conversation that I had yesterday about salary cap space, you know, and the fact that, you know, they may not be flush with cash, and there may be creative ways to kind of fill up the cap with backloaded contracts. Don't forget, too, in addition to what they've spent on the stadium, they're still paying coaches for another year
That's
or two.
That's right.
You know, Rivera for another year, Bieniemy for another year.
Probably Del Rio for another year.
Probably maybe. Del Rio for another year. And maybe a couple of others that we don't think, and players too that they'll move on from. But anyway, I don't know. I'm we'll
you
see.
Know, this
we'll
is,
see what happens.
You know, I was hard on them, and I'm not taking it back.
You should.
Well, I was hard on them when they decided to raise ticket prices for next year.
Yes.
You know, part of me, I was hard with the way they announced it in the press release.
The timing.
You know, not just the timing, but they talked about how, you know, they had so many sold out games this year.
Yeah, right.
You know, I thought that was really disingenuous since they were not home crowds. But, you know, maybe I can understand more now why they had to raise ticket prices, because they've got a lot of expenses.
Yeah. And they paid $6 billion
yeah,
for the team.
Yeah.
And they do have a lot of
it's
expenses,
still,
but
still
I agreed with you. I thought the timing, it was bad optics, the timing,
yeah.
You know, they were finishing up a 4-13 yeah. season, and then to talk about the sold out crowds, like there was
right.
so much renewed excitement
yeah.
there was for the opener, and then it kind of waned, but I think it's back. And I always thought that the real beginning of the Josh Harris ownership tenure would begin with the firing of Ron Rivera in the offseason
yeah.
here in 2024. And we're building towards some exciting times ahead.
I can't wait for the draft party at Commander Stadium.
Yeah. You know what? This would be the year when a quarterback at number two where you could actually get some people
yes.
to the draft party.
Yes, you could.
You and I did some of those draft day Saturday shows where they were, you know, it was a big draft day party at FedEx Field, and you went out and looked around, and there may have been a couple of thousand people there. We also did the RG3
one. The RG3 one when he flew in the helicopter.
Yeah, there were like 25,000 people
yeah,
legitimately in the crowd. There is some Washington team news. This just reported moments ago. Tom Pelissero, and I'm reading it off of Ben's Twitter page, Ben Standings. The Commanders are signing free agent tight end Zach Ertz. That is a reunion with Cliff Kingsbury. He caught 54 balls in their 2021 season in Arizona when they went 11-6 and went to the postseason. So Zach Ertz is a Washington commander. What?
This is so juvenile.
Oh, boy.
Do we have time for juvenile?
Of course.
Okay. I mean, every time I hear Zach Ertz's name, I always think of the thing we used to do for substitute teachers in school, where they would give you a sheet of paper to sign your name because for attendance.
Oh, so is Dick Ertz?
Yeah. And our teacher would say, who's Dick Ertz?
Richard Ertz.
Every time I hear Zach Ertz, I always think of that.
So Zach Ertz was, I think he was planning on retiring because, you know, his wife, the big soccer player.
Julie.
What's her name?
Julie
Ertz. I think she's retiring.
Uh-huh.
And I think they were going to retire together, but obviously.
How nice.
But it looks like Kingsbury's talking Ertz
and
coming back.
Some team flirted with the idea of signing him. The Lions?
Yes,
the Lions flirted with.
I think they did actually sign him to the practice squad.
Did they? I don't think they
maybe
did.
Maybe not.
No, I think, but it was reported they were in talks about signing him. But I don't think it ever got finalized. So
he signed with the Lions practice squad.
Oh, okay.
Actually, on January 22nd, 2024. So that's basically a month and a half ago. But his contract expired when the team season ended on January 28th. So they signed him before one of the playoff games.
Right.
Or the potential championship game at that point. Whatever. And then when their season ended in the loss to the 49ers in the NFC title game, he was a free agent. But he's 33 years old. I mean, Zach Ertz was always a good tight end. Had some big drops at times. But a big-time tight end and familiar with the Kingsbury system. You know, real quickly, the air raid, which everybody always associates with guys like Kingsbury and Mike Leach and Hal Mumme and all these guys that started the origin of it, you know, that offense never used tight ends. Like, they just had no need for tight ends. They didn't recruit tight ends. There just weren't tight ends. And so when he got to the NFL, people were wondering about tight ends. Zach Ertz, you know, was targeted 81 times.
Yeah.
He said this in his introductory, you're not getting the true air raid offense. First of all, you really can't run an air raid style. The hash marks are different. The rules are different in the RPO game. There's just a lot that's different about pro football that Kingsbury, you know, adjusted to in Arizona. His offenses were middle of the pack, you know, when he was there. So,
you know, I mean, in the NFL, it would appear that it's difficult to have a very successful offense. Oh, if you have enough players, I guess you could. But tight end has become a very important position over the years.
Yeah.
And it was one of the many failures of Ron Rivera, who had a very good tight end in Carolina with Greg Olsen.
Yep.
Never seemed to put much value on it here in Washington. Was always content to shop at the Goodwill store for tight ends.
I think that group loved Logan Thomas. Like, I think they really thought a lot of Logan Thomas. It's just, in the season he had in 2020 was really good.
I know.
Before a very serious injury. But you're right. I was just thinking about something, and I'm looking this up just to make sure I'm right.
The Ravens showed that you can have enough good tight ends.
Remember the Mouse Davis run-and-shoot offense that the Falcons employed, the Lions employed in the 80s and 90s? Warren Moon was a part of.
Yes.
With the Houston teams. No tight ends in that offense. It was just receivers and usually smaller receivers everywhere. And I'm looking up the roster of the Lions team that Richie Pettibone just completely destroyed twice in the 91 season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he shut them out in the opener and then beat them 41-10 in the NFC title game. They had no chance. For whatever reason, run and shoot teams, Richie just laughed at and said, no, this is how we're going to handle it. And when we did the Richie Pettibone Lunch with a Legend show. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I kind of
saved his life. That's the vision I have of that show.
Yeah, I saved his life. We were on a stage, and he was leaning back in his chair, and the chair was about to go over on the stage.
And there was no wall. There was a curtain.
Yeah, there was a curtain.
But there was no wall behind us.
Yeah, and I reached out and grabbed the chair and pushed it back onto the stage.
Oh, yes. Said,
that was a close one.
Oh, yes. We would have been front page news.
But I remember him talking about how the run and shoot was like, you know, if you knew how to stop it. And I forget what he specifically said. I think he put more athletes. Like, he had Monty Coleman, which was a big deal in shutting down the run and shoot. But when they played Atlanta or Detroit or the teams that ran the run and shoot, they couldn't do anything against Richie's defense. And I'm just looking at the Detroit team. They didn't have one tight end that had a catch in 16 games.
Wow.
No, that's not true. Their tight ends totaled five catches on the season. They did have a big receiver in Herman Moore, the Virginia receiver. The Falcons had all those little receivers and the Oilers did as well. Those teams generated a lot of points, a lot of offensive excitement, unless they were playing Richie Pettibone's defenses, but they didn't advance in the postseason.
No.
It was not a cold weather offense, for sure.
And there weren't as many dome stadiums then as there are now.
True. All of that is true. All right, Tommy wants to talk a little Nats. We're also going to talk a little bit more about Russell Wilson because RG3 went off in defense of Russell Wilson. We'll get to that more right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Tommy, tell us about Shelley's.
Well, Shelley's back room at 1331 F Street Northwest is a great place to be any time of day. But I would just want to let everybody know, if you're out on the town in D.C. at night, you know, pre-COVID, a lot of places used to stay open late. Post-COVID, a lot of places close a lot earlier than they used to. In fact, it's hard to find some places open on a Monday or a Tuesday.
Monday,
anymore.
A lot of places are closed.
Well, not Shelley's. Shelley's is open Mondays from 11:30 a.m. till midnight, okay? And that's the earliest they close. Shelley's is open Tuesdays through Thursdays until 2 a.m., Friday and Saturday until 3 a.m. in the morning. You don't find places that do that.
No, not many.
Anymore. And their kitchen is often open late as well. So when you're rolling around town and you've been to a couple of clubs or maybe a club or two, or you've been to an event at the Kennedy Center or something like that, and you're looking for a place to hang out and it's midnight, Shelley's is the place to go. Shelley's will be open. It'll be lively. You'll get great service. They have these TVs. They have 8 large big screen TVs, comfortable seating, comfortable couches. It's the place to go when you've been running around town and you're looking for a nightcap. Head for Shelley's back room at 1331 F Street Northwest.
At least you didn't mouthwater me with the menu today, because I am starving. And just thinking about some of the burgers that they have down there.
I know.
You know, the Shelley's burger, which is great. And then their sandwiches, like the Cuban sandwich, which is awesome.
I know. I got here before you had a chance to go out to lunch.
I didn't go get a bite to eat today.
I know. I'm sorry.
I'm just sitting here. You know what I've had? Look at my shelf. What do I have on the bottom shelf down there, Tommy? What were we talking about the other day?
You got paper towels.
Well, I have a box of.
You got duct tape.
I have a box of cereal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you see the Cheerios right there?
Cheerios, yes.
I've had Magic Spoon lining the shelves of the studio here. Weren't we talking about cereals, or was I talking about that with Denton on the air?
You weren't talking about with me because I'm an adult. I don't eat cereal.
Adults do eat cereal. Yeah, you're wrong about that.
I know, I am.
I still eat cereals.
I know you
love
do.
Cereals. All right, so I want you to listen to what Robert Griffin III, our favorite guy, said on ESPN's Mike Greenberg show, Get Up, yesterday morning when talking about Russell Wilson and really coming to his defense. Here it was.
I think the bottom line is when you bring in a quarterback of that caliber and you cater it to him, you have to fully cater it to him, not put him in an offense with a first-time head coach, a first-time play caller, a first-time GM, and a young team, and expect him to make chicken out of chicken shit.
He actually said that, and they weren't prepared for it, so they weren't able to bleep it out. He forgot the actual saying, which is chicken salad
yes.
out of chicken shit. But he was fired up, and he was fired up. He went on to say, for me, hearing everyone talk about him the way that they have doesn't really match up to the way he played, and it certainly doesn't match up to the fact that Russell Wilson is a Hall of Fame quarterback. The bottom line is that Russell Wilson is a starting quarterback in the NFL, and he's easily a top 20 quarterback, and I'm sick and tired of hearing Russell Wilson's name get dragged through the mud, closed quote.
I suspect this is personal for RG3.
Yeah.
I mean, the same complaints you hear about Russell Wilson, you've heard about RG3, minus the talent that Russell Wilson has.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you know, RG3 had talent.
Yeah, for a first season.
Yeah. Well, he had talent coming into the league.
Yes,
and
he
then
did.
He was destroyed injury-wise.
Uh-huh.
You know. But he always had talent.
Yes.
But there was some things missing.
Yes.
Russell Wilson was every bit the quarterback that people thought RG3 would become, but never did.
Right.
But what you're saying, I hear that too.
Yeah.
I hear that too.
Yeah, because the complaints about RG3, that he was a phony, that he was shallow, that he put on a front and all this is what you heard about Russell Wilson. Same things about him. So I think this is a personal thing for him. I think he's defending himself. I don't think he's defending Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Because it's always about RG3.
Yeah, I think the complaints aren't exactly the same, because Russell Wilson, when he left Seattle, and that, you know, lengthy expose on him in Seattle was written right after the trade to Denver. It was right before the regular season when they opened against each other. Remember, Denver, with Nathaniel Hackett as the head coach in his first year, opened on Monday Night Football
right.
at Seattle, which was a big, you know, built-up matchup. And that story was shocking to people who didn't know what was going on in Seattle, that he was an absolute diva, that he had, you know, essentially he was very difficult to get along with. He was incredibly aloof.
Yes.
His marriage to Sierra, you know, he fancied himself to be this major superstar, well above sort of the NFL quarterback superstar level, that he was, you know, Hollywood. And you've still, to this day, you hear, like, on podcasts, some of those former Seattle players, Richard Sherman and others, just mocking the time with Russell Wilson. And then Denver, when he got there, you know, he's got his own office. He's got they've made all of these accommodations for him. And when Sean Payton got hired, one of the first things he said, I'm paraphrasing here, is, we're not doing the Russell Wilson thing here.
Yeah.
You know, he's part of this team. Robert, he wasn't to that extent. Robert was entitled by the owner.
He didn't have the opportunity.
True. He wasn't around long enough.
Right.
You know, these things, I mean, these things should be good, well-owned teams. And Seattle was a well-owned team, which is, by the way, why John Schneider tried to trade him in 2016, which was an amazing story that came out of that thing. In the height of Russell Wilson, they were trying to trade him in 2016 to Cleveland for the overall number one pick. Teams, it's their fault.
Yeah,
it's their fault for
allowing it to happen.
And I think part of what Robert definitely is identifying
Pete Carroll then.
You got to put that on Pete Carroll. You got to put it on ownership. Here, you definitely put it on Dan Snyder.
Yes.
Because this was not a Mike Shanahan decision to allow the quarterback to feel that he was entitled to things that the rest of the team wasn't entitled to.
Right.
But you do hear some of that defense coming from Robert. But he is right about one thing. Russell Wilson, and I mentioned this yesterday, and I know that not everybody agrees, and that's fine, but if you watched him last year, he had a good season.
I agree.
He had a season.
I don't think he played poorly.
I think he had a season that proved that he is certainly a starting quarterback still in the league, not the Russell Wilson of old, but he is capable of being a middle-of-the-pack starter in the NFL. And at $1 million with Denver, league minimum, with Denver picking up the $85 million over the next 2 years, if you don't have another answer in the draft or other ways to find the quarterback answer, like if you're the Raiders, or if you're the Titans.
Yeah.
I think Will Levis is a possibility, but you could go with Russell Wilson if the Vikings lose Kirk and can't draft a quarterback. So I do agree with Robert on his ability, but man, nothing says, and this is what he's missing in his rant, nothing says we despise you so much that we are going to pay $85 million in cap penalty hits the next 2 years for you to potentially play against us at some point.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned yesterday, it's that David Justice, Billy Bean, from Moneyball. No. When Brad Pitt says, no. We're not paying your salary.
Yeah.
The Yankees are paying you to play against them, and you don't take dead cap hits like that one unless you have a problem with the person.
Yeah.
Because he didn't play poorly enough for you to move on from him at that expense. All right, you said you wanted to talk about spring training and your Nats trip and
just briefly.
And just talk about the Nats in general, because they've got some big bats here in spring training.
Yeah, they do. They got some young players, James Wood, who's playing well, Dylan Cruz, their number one draft pick from this past season. There's been a lot to be excited about in spring training, but it's spring training. Again, baseball, I think more than any other sport, is the truest in terms of measuring your talent. Over 162 games in a regular season, you pretty much are the player that you turn out to be at that point. And I get the idea of being excited for the young players. All the more reason to have spent more money if these players are really ready to take another step, to complement them with some veteran players. Because that's part of the development. I've talked about it before.
Right.
Surround them with veteran players who know how to be major leaguers. It's a lot to be excited about. I'm looking forward to going to West Palm Beach. I'm going to sit down and talk to Davey for an interview. Davey Martinez, the manager. And I'll watch a few games and...
Back in Florida.
I can't get away.
Will you look for a karaoke bar?
No, what did I tell you? It's done. It's over.
Yeah, but it's not the same place.
It's over.
You're on the East Coast now.
Over.
I was going to ask you, there's no doubt that baseball's 162 games, it really, who these players are. And by the way, it's also a sport, unlike football, where everything you do is pretty much quantifiable and measurable.
Yes.
Whereas in the NFL... The reason that a lot of the analytics advanced based people get pushback and even from the teams is that many more players with many things and much of it not measurable in numbers. By the way, they have no idea what the player's responsibilities are a lot of the time in some of these on some of these plays. But is baseball spring training as worthless as the NFL's preseason? No, right? You're figuring out who's going to be a part of the group when you get to opening day, because it's a month-long deal of everyday playing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is, and there's split squad games. Sometimes there's two games on the same day. Like when I'm there on Sunday – They'll have a group of players that will travel up the road to play, I think, the Marlins, and then another group will have a home game that night against the Astros. So, yeah, it's very valuable. It's valuable to get a look at the young players.
Yeah.
You know, before they disappear down in the minor leagues for the season.
Do you know that as a sports fan, I have been to a spring training game one time? That is it.
Where?
In Sarasota. Was it Sarasota or Naples where I saw
Reds?
Was it Sarasota that I saw the Reds? Or was I in another part of Florida? Marco Island, did I see, or down in that area, did I see the Reds?
The Reds?
Where are the Reds home? I saw a Reds spring training game.
In Arizona now.
Are they?
But I think they used to train in Florida. I forget where it was, but Sarasota has been the White Sox.
Yeah, the Reds spring training is in Arizona in the Cactus League now.
But it didn't used to be. I think it used to be in Florida.
I want to see Plant City Stadium, Plant City, Florida was the home. Sarasota. It was Sarasota.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where I saw him.
Okay.
So I've been to one spring training.
There's a lot of people who have never been to spring training. They should make
I think if I had baseball growing up, it would have been a much bigger part of my life. All right, do you have anything else?
I got nothing else for you,
boss. I got nothing else either. I'll be back tomorrow. Good to see you.
One of the most incredible turnarounds I have ever seen. It is John Havlicek who put the Celtics ahead. Then the Suns took the technical to get court position. Curtis Perry wanted somebody to stand back. Won't start till it's touched. They'll have to throw it up. Gorher, turnaround, shot in the air. It's good. It's tied again. I don't believe it. Garfield heard at the buzzer. Threw one in outside. We've got a third overtime in a Boston Garden.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.